This episode is brought to you by Sterling Soap Company. Fellas, you've heard the phrase, look good, feel good, right? But why not add smell good to that too? That's where Sterling Soap Company comes in. First, Sterling Soap is 100% natural and has a wide variety of bath soaps, shave soaps, beard balm, lotions, and cologne. Second, there's a scent just for you. How about burgundy? Yeah, it's more than a color. The Sterling Soap folks blend natural essential oils with hints of mahogany, golden amber, and sandalwood. Or how about D503, an intensely masculine scent inspired by Legend by Mont Blanc. And third, you will feel good about the price. For just a little more than you'd pay at the grocery store, Sterling Soap will leave you feeling clean, refreshed, and ready for whatever's next. Give Sterling Soap a try today. Visit sterlingsoap.com. This Day in Sports History. Hey, and welcome back to This Day in Sports History. It's May 4th, and on this day in 1968, Dancer's Image won the Kentucky Derby, only to become the first horse in history to have the win stripped days later. So, first off, happy Derby Day. The 150th running is today, and hopefully it all goes off well and with no controversy. But that was not the case back in 1968 for the 94th running of the Kentucky Derby. And if you are not familiar with this story, buckle up, because this story is a roller coaster ride that has a little bit of everything. First off, Dancer's Image did not break from the gate well and was dead last once the horses got up to full speed. But future Hall of Fame jockey Bobby Ussery got the colt moving, and it started to pace its way back up to the front. And by the end, Dancer's Image was a full 1.5 lengths in front of Forward Pass to claim the Blanket of Roses and the $122,000 winner's check. Dancer's Image owner Peter Fuller basked in the spotlight that comes with having a Derby winner at the after party that night. But while he was enjoying himself at the after party, Dancer's Image was being drug tested, as was normal for a Derby winner. Specifically, the tests were looking for performance enhancers such as cocaine and heroin. Heroin is a stimulant in horses, not the depressant it is in humans. The tests were also looking for other drugs in the system. When the test came back, it was determined that Dancer's Image had phenylbutazone in his system. At that time, the Derby had a zero-tolerance policy for prohibited medications. It didn't matter the amount, it only mattered if it was present. Phenylbutazone, or bute, was on the list of banned substances, but there are a few things to know before passing your own judgment. First, it was not illegal for a horse to take phenylbutazone, which is an antihistamine and pain reliever in horses. It's sort of like how aspirin works in us. So, a horse could take bute as long as it was out of its system by the end of the race. Dancer's Image trainer said he had given the colt bute about a week prior to the race. In most cases, a horse would pass it out of its system in that time. But it's possible the horse did not metabolize it quickly enough. Now remember, it didn't matter the amount. It could have been a trace amount. It was just present. So the report was passed on to the Kentucky Racing Commission, who didn't get it until Monday morning. On Tuesday, it was announced that Dancer's Image had been relegated to last place, and Forward Pass was the official winner of the 1968 Derby. But hang on a second, that is not where this story ends. Peter Fuller, the owner, immediately sued over the decision, and it would take 5 years for it to be resolved. Initially, a Kentucky state judge ruled in favor of Fuller, at which point he took out a full-page ad in a horse racing magazine reclaiming his crown. But hang on another second or two, because that's not the end of it either. The Kentucky State Racing Commission appealed that decision and won, meaning Forward Pass was back to being the official winner. Fuller ended his fight in 1973, and now, 5 years after the race, the prize money, which had been sitting in escrow all this time, accruing interest, was finally given to Calumet Farms, owner of Forward Pass. Ah, but you think that's the end of the story, huh? Well, in terms of who the official winner was, well, that is right, it is complete. But Fuller wondered if something janky was actually going on behind the scenes. Now, Fuller was a horse owner from the Northeast who was a supporter of civil rights. This is 1968, and while Kentucky was officially Union in the Civil War, not all of its citizens were supporters of the civil rights movement. A few weeks before the Derby, Fuller had publicly donated the winnings from one of Dancer's Image's pre-Derby victories to Coretta Scott King after the assassination of her husband, Martin Luther King Jr. Fuller had protested against housing discrimination in Louisville during the 1967 Kentucky Derby. He and his horse received death threats prior to the 68 Derby for his vocal support of the civil rights movement. Dancer's Image was referred to by a racial epithet in the lead-up to the race. Fuller requested additional security for his horse in the paddock, which had been denied him. So, was Dancer's Image given phenylbutazone prior to the race by an unknown person wanting to thwart any possibility for the horse to win the Derby? That theory has been fluttered about. Add to that that less than 2 years later, the Kentucky State Racing Commission removed Bute from the banned list, and now horses routinely step into the gate with plenty of it in their system. But on this day in 1968, the amount in Dancer's Image system was enough to disqualify him, becoming the first horse in the history of the Derby to lose its title. Also on this day in 1968, the Pittsburgh Pipers won the first ABA championship with a 122-113 win over the New Orleans Buccaneers. It was Game 7, but Pittsburgh really felt like they won the series in Game 6 in New Orleans. They fought back behind Connie Hawkins' 41-point performance to win on the road and bring the decisive game back to Pittsburgh. Instead of the typical 2,000 they had at home games during the regular season, the Pipers packed a peck of people into the arena, filling it to the rafters with a full house of more than 11,000. Hawkins nearly had a triple-double with 20 points, 16 boards, and 9 assists. Sweet Charlie Williams had 21 in the first half and finished with a game-high 35. Art Heyman had 18 points, but he was fortunate to have played that night. Heyman had been arrested after Game 6 in New Orleans when he thought a Bucks fan had spit on him. Heyman had punched the fan in the face. New Orleans police arrested him in the locker room a few minutes later, and once Heyman understood it was not intentional, he apologized and the charges were dropped. As weird as the ABA was when it existed, one of the weirdest things that happened is that the Pipers, after winning the inaugural ABA championship, relocated to Minnesota the following year. Attendance and fan support wasn't any better there than it had been in the regular season in Pittsburgh in 68. So, the team moved back to the Iron City for year three. In 1984, Dave Kingman hit a fly ball that never came down. Kingman was known for hitting monster shots and tape measure home runs, but this one was a little bit different. Kingman was playing with the Oakland A's at the time, and the A's were on the road at Minnesota on this night. Kingman's fly ball climbed all the way to the fiberglass fabric roof of the Metrodome, 186 feet into the air, and disappeared into a drainage hole. Well, there weren't any ground rules stipulated for such an instance. So while the umpiring crew consulted with one another, the Twins players on the field feared the ball would come back out of the hole and plummet to the field. First baseman Mickey Hatcher pickpocketed the home plate ump's bag of balls and slammed it on the ground as if the ball had actually fallen from the roof, tagging Kingman in hopes they would call him out. They didn't. Eventually, the umps decided it would be a ground rule double, and the two teams played the rest of the game under the threat that a ball could come falling out of the sky at any point. It also did not. A Metrodome staffer went up to the roof the next day and retrieved the ball. In 1979, the St. Louis Cardinals selected Kirk Gibson in the 7th round of the NFL draft. Side note for the younger sports fans out there, the Arizona Cardinals were the St. Louis Cardinals until 1988. Gibson had been an All-American wide receiver for the Michigan State Spartans, and he had not taken up baseball until his senior year at the suggestion of football coach Darryl Rogers. In his 1 year of college baseball, he hit .390 with 16 home runs, and apparently, that's all Gibson needed to whet his appetite for baseball. The Detroit Tigers liked what they saw of the home state kid and took him in the first round of the 78 MLB draft. Gibson said no to the Cardinals and football, and decided to play baseball instead. Gibson became well known for hitting clutch home runs in his career, including the most famous World Series walk-off, I Don't Believe What I Just Saw, home run. And in 2003, golfer David Toms dominated the inaugural Wachovia Championship at Quail Hollow Country Club in Charlotte, so much so that even the snowman quadruple bogey 8 that he put up on the final hole did not derail his victory. He still won by 2 shots over Robert Gomez. And time now for today's non-sports Did You Know? A honeybee will produce only 1/12 of a teaspoon of honey in its lifetime. That's all for today, and this is normally where I would play off the 1/12 figure from above and equate that to how little time it would take to give a 5-star review and leave a comment on Apple Podcasts, but I'm not going to do that today. You've got other things to do. I've got things to do. So I'll just say thanks for stopping by, and I'll see you tomorrow on This Day in Sports History. This has been an original Thrive Suite production.
Hey there, Sports History fans.
We've got some exciting news to share with you. 6 of our podcasts from the Sports History Network have made it to the final round of voting for the prestigious Sports Podcast Awards. Here are their shows and the categories. Historically Speaking Sports and This Day in Sports History are both competing for Best Sports Talk Podcast. No Nonsense Old School Weightlifting History is in the running for Best Fitness, Health, and Well-Being Podcast. When Football Was Football is up for Best Sports Documentary Podcast. Wrestling with Heels On has entered the ring for Best Wrestling Podcast. And Shoulder Roll Virtual Boxing is fighting for the title for Best Combat Sports Podcast. Now, of course, we need your help to take home the championship for each of these awesome shows. All you gotta do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/vote, cast your vote for your favorite shows, or better yet, all 6 of them. Again, every vote counts, and we gotta show the world how much sports history really matters. So thank you for your support and making Sports History Network the headquarters for sports yesteryear. But again, don't wait. You got to go vote now. That's over at sportshistorynetwork.com/vote.